right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, March 20th, 2015. And it says, before the first cup of Jules here on UCY.TV, happy spring solstice, day of the blood moon, and European eclipse all happening on the same day, March 20th. Pretty interesting there. It is 37 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York. At least we are above freezing. I see we have snow in the general vicinity, but at least most of the moisture is down south. I saw we have actually not one, but two little snowstorms blowing in this weekend. They even gave one of them a name. So much for spring. But yes, I think spring rolls in at like 6. I looked at it yesterday, 6:53 maybe, Eastern PM. So it'll be here soon. And much happy wishes to all of you. Happy spring. It's always so much better for my mood, that's for certain. All right, so where are we going to continue here for a Friday? We've been digging into brain stuff over the last couple days, Kurzweil and some of his crazy fantasies that he seems to be making a reality with unlimited funds of Google behind him and all kinds of other lunatics that he's met along the way. And I hate to tell you, but a lot of these lunatics are lunatics that are working at places like MIT and some of the big universities making their lunacy reality. So I guess put on a seatbelt. Yesterday, let me hop over there. Sorry, unprepared for coming to class. We are going to hop to my page because if I remembered the page name, only on a half a cup of coffee, only on a half a cup of coffee. Everything is real slow and unresponsive here this morning. Before, there we go. This is before the first cup, remember? It's actually before the first full cup is where we're at right at the moment. Oh, yes, here we go. So the show yesterday was titled Brain Monitoring with Nanobots, Tech Companies in the NSA. We had listened to a decent interview from a few days ago from Robert Freitas with Kurzweil, and he had talked about nanotechnology in healthcare. And then yesterday we had looked at one of Freitas's papers about non-damaging use of nanotech to get into the brain and pretty much do whatever they had to do. But there was some interesting stuff when we were digging into that. We had done a story in regards to this new treatment for Alzheimer's. And we're going to do just a little blurb here. Because SLC Mike found an interesting connection with another story I had posted that I hadn't dug into yet. So the story comes out of Science Alert in Australia yesterday that there's this new treatment that fully restores memory function in brains of Alzheimer's patients. It says that on the mice that received the treatment, over 75% of the got their memories back. And it kind of goes through and it talks about amyloid plaques. We read this whole story yesterday, but something that was very interesting was how they were doing this. And that was using ultrasound. And I'm going to find that paragraph because there was a little piece in here that we started to find a connection to. This is published in the Science Translational Medicine. The team describes the technique as using a particular type of ultrasound called focused therapeutic ultrasound, which non-invasively beams sound waves into brain tissue. By oscillating super fast, these sound waves are able to gently open up the blood-brain barrier, which again, like we've said before, the blood-brain barrier is what protects you from foreign invaders getting into your bloodstream from your digestive system, let's say. So opening up that blood-brain barrier should be done with great caution. But they found a way to do this to then allow the brain's microglial cells to move in. Those are the waste removal cells. I had questioned yesterday as to whether or not they were supposed to be in the brain. And everything that I read is, yes, they are supposed to be in the brain. So I don't know if maybe they somehow get locked out of the brain or not, but these microglial cells go in and they munch up all the amyloid plaques, and apparently it gives them their memory back. But the interesting part about that is opening the blood-brain barrier. So I had also posted a story yesterday after mentioning smart dust, something that I talked about quite a number of years ago. I mean, it's been on the plate. HP was working on it for a very long time, and I'm sure that somewhere along the way it's already been implemented. That Freitas has talked about how to control nanotechnology, and he had mentioned having sensors everywhere that could be monitoring 24/7. And that's definitely the type of stuff they're going to have to use, is some sort of smart dust, very small nanoparticulate that has some sort of computer intelligence where it can process information and send back statistics. So let's read the story out of MIT Technology Review now, since we've looked at how they're curing Alzheimer's. We know that DARPA has been doing all kinds of brain research on removing and replacing traumatic memories. One way that they were doing that was with flashes of light. There was another way that they were doing that, and that was with sound. So remembering both those things, now let's listen to this. How smart dust could spy on your brain. MIT Technology Review, July 16th, 2013. Intelligent dust particles embedded in the brain can form an entirely new form of brain-machine interface, says engineers. The real-time monitoring of brain function has advanced in leaps and bounds in recent years, thanks largely to various new technologies that can monitor the collective behavior of groups of neurons, such as functional magnetic resonance imaging, magnetoencephalopathy, and positron emission tomography. Yeah, that's a PET scan. This work is revolutionizing our understanding of the way the brain is structured and behaves. It also leads to new engineering disciplines of brain-machine interfaces, which allows people to control machines by thought alone. And, you know, they've been working on some of that as well. They have keyboards and mice that do that, measuring brain waves with just a little thing that goes over the top of your head. They've been using it also with prosthetics patients, where they just put this little thing on their head, and now they have full control over their new bionic arm. Impressive though these techniques are, they all suffer from inherent limitations such as limited spatial resolution, a lack of portability, and extreme invasiveness. Today, Dong Jin Seo and pals at the University of California, Berkeley revealed an entirely new way to study and interact with the brain. Their idea is to sprinkle electronic sensors the size of dust particles into the cortex and to interrogate them remotely using ultrasounds. The ultrasound also powers the so-called neurodust. Each particle of neurodust consists of standard CMOS circuits and sensors that measure the electrical activity in neurons nearby. This is coupled to a piezoelectric material that converts ultra-high frequency sound waves into electrical signals and vice versa. The neurodust is interrogated by another component placed beneath the scale, but powered from outside the body. This generates the ultrasound that powers the neural dust and sensors that listen out for their response, kind of like an RFID system. The system is also tetherless. The data is collected and stored outside the body for later analysis. So wait, did we just read that correctly? So we can self-power these smart dust particles that have been put into the brain, creating some sort of electrical signal that is converted from ultra-high frequency sound waves, and we can interrogate them, meaning gather the information from them using ultrasound. Wow, that sounds eerily familiar to the procedure using ultrasound to open the blood-brain barrier that they're now tinkering with in Australia. Now, if that smart dust got into your brain and we opened up that blood-brain barrier, or if that smart dust got into your body, like, oh, I don't know, we breathed it in or we ingested it in our food. And then there's some ultrasound bursts, which, by the way, we can't hear. And those ultrasound bursts open the blood-brain barrier so those smart dusts could get into our brains. And then they can use whatever this ultra-high frequency sound wave that, oh, I don't know. You know, when I start hearing stuff like this, I just keep remembering how the end of last season, HARP, which there was no fantasy. HARP existed. It was living up in Alaska, and they had a website, and all of their readings were online 24/7. Oh, what? It's not online anymore? No. They, out of the blue, decided that they were going to shut it down, but only after the very last experiment, which was performed there, that DARPA had rented the space out or whatever they were doing. And then they announced that HARP was closed. So, when I think about that, and I think about this large array of antennas that they have out there that they are able to beam, I don't know. I mean, it's ELF, HLF, high frequency, low frequency, whatever it is, it's frequencies. We don't know what all the frequencies are. It's just some sort of frequency distribution system that they have there. We're not really sure what they're doing. We've seen some effects. I mean, there have been questions as to whether or not they're trying to manipulate the weather with HARP or if it's some sort of mind control. But we know that the Chinese have a HARP. We know that the Russians have a HARP. So whatever they're doing with a HARP, all I'm saying is to be able to spread ultra-high frequency sound waves over a large tract of land, as Monty Python would say. It could be very possible. We also have lots of satellites. I don't know if they can do that from a satellite, but hey, they have their Argus, billions of megapixel cameras up there. Who's to say that they can't just release some sort of ultrasound high frequency wave to turn on these little electronic devices that they've found many ways to get into our bodies? Just pointing out here, though, that there's some technology that is out there, it's being experimented with and used that seem very similar. And they do things that would be very advantageous to these mad scientists gone mad that we've been looking at. Getting nano sensors or smart dust sensors to cross the blood-brain barrier to what? Oh, get into your brain and be able to monitor the neurons, which is what we were just reading that they're working on, and then send information outward would be right up their alley. And Freitas talked about that very thing, nanobots in the brain. That was that paper that we read yesterday. All right. The neurodust is interrogated by another component placed beneath the scale. Oh, I read that already. The system is also tetherless. The data is collected and stored outside the body for later analysis. Yes, slice and dice put into a database and become a thought criminal. That gets around many of the limitations. The system is low power. It can have a high spatial resolution and it is easily portable. It is also rugged and could potentially provide a link over long periods of time. Quote, a major hurdle in brain-machine interfaces is the lack of an implantable neural interface system that remains viable for a lifetime. Now, they are already experimenting with brain-computer implantable interfaces, but yeah, I didn't realize they were having like longevity issues with it. The difficulty is in designing and building such a system, and today's paper is a theoretical study of these challenges. First is the problem of designing and building neural dust particles on a scale of roughly 100 micrometers that can send and receive signals in the harsh, warm, and noisy environment within the body. That's why CO, who is the guy who's working on this, and company have chosen ultrasound to send and receive data. Yeah, because we can't hear it. They calculate that the power required to use electromagnetic waves on the scale, would generate a damaging amount of heat because of the amount of energy the body absorbs and the troubling signal-to-noise ratio at that scale. By contrast, ultrasound, well, yeah, I guess. If we use microwaves, they'd be cooking us alive. That might be something on their future plan list. By contrast, don't they already have those microwave guns, those heat wave guns for protesters? I think they do, where they shoot them at you, and they're actually shooting microwaves so you heat up. By contrast, ultrasound is much more efficient and should allow the transmission of at least 10 million times more power than electromagnetic waves at the same scale. Next is the problem of linking the electronics to the piezoelectric system that converts ultrasound to electrical signals and vice versa. Ensuring that the system works efficiently will be tricky, given that it has to be packaged in an inert polymer or insulator film, which must also be exposed, which must also expose the recording electrodes to nearby neurons. Finally, there is a challenge of designing and building the interrogation system that generates the ultrasound to power the entire array, but at a low enough power to avoid heating the skull and the brain. Well, at least they're thinking of our well-being. Not. On the top of all this is the additional challenge of implanting the neural dust particles into the cortex. Well, we just figured that out, didn't we? CO and company say that this can probably be done by fabricating the dust particles on the tip of a fine wire array held in place by surface tension. For example, this array would be dipped into the cortex where the dust particles become embedded. Well, they found an easier way. You breathe it, gets into your system. You ingest it, it gets into your system. Do a flash of ultrasound, opens the blood-brain barrier, and those things just pass right through. That's an ambitious vision that is littered with challenges beyond the state of the art. However, the team has a strong background in nano-electromechanical systems and in the interface between electronic systems and cells. Well, damn. And they got it going on. Indeed, one of the authors, Michael Marsharbes, developed the world's first remotely controlled beetle a few years ago. And yeah, do you guys remember that? Actually, my daughter remembers that, the remote controlled cockroach. That was when I first started doing radio, and I could not believe that they had actually done that, but they did. They implanted electrodes into a cockroach brain, and then they were controlling them with a gamer joypad. Or whatever they called them. You know what I'm talking about, like the controller for a video game, making them turn right and left. And there was a story. Actually, we'll have to find that. Speaking about cockroaches, hold on. And that remotely controlled beetle was a development that was named one of the top 10 emerging technologies of 2009 by Technology Review. These guys clearly are not afraid to take on big challenges. Yes, being able to steal the last privacy that we have as human beings. It'll be interesting to see how they fare. Yeah, neurodust, an ultrasonic, low-powered solution for chronic brain-machine interfaces. That was the name of the paper. Chronic brain-machine interfaces. Chronic, to me, is always a term that doesn't give me a warm and fuzzy. Chronic to me is like a chronic disease. Having Kurzweil in my head would be a chronic disease. Yeah, I found a story the other day. Hold on, we're going to have to find this one. Here we go. Long live the cockroaches. You know, they said many times if there was ever a nuclear war, the only things that they think would be left would be the cockroaches. But cockroaches have become a poor lab animal that gets tortured and studied with brain interfaces now, along with the beetles. But listen to what they found out.
You might have more in common with the much maligned cockroach than you'd like to admit. Researchers from the Free University of Brussels found cockroaches have personalities and even display different character traits, such as bravery and shyness.
That's it.
Lead researcher Isaac Planus said the pests make perfect test subjects because of their well-documented decision-making abilities.
Cockroaches have personalities. I mean, I honestly, when I was growing up, they had taught us that animals did not have feelings. And, you know, maybe They said that because they had to find a way to justify some of the horrifying things that they do to animals in the name of the greater good and research. But anyone who's ever had a pet, anyone who's ever had a beloved pet that they've connected with, knows that animals have personalities and animals have feelings. They're not just dumb, like they used to say. They have ways of thinking and reasoning and problem-solving skills. Even birds, cephalopods, and now we're finding out even cockroaches.
Cockroaches are a simple animal, but they can reach a complex decision. With little information, with little interactions, only knowing if I have a partner here or not, only with this information, they can make complex decisions.
At least 300 specimens of Periplaneta americana, or the American cockroach, were examined over 3 months. Tiny microchips are attached to their backs. When placed in a brightly lit arena containing 2 round shelters, scientists monitored how long it took the roaches to hide underneath. Some insects took cover as soon as they entered the arena, while others spent more time exploring, a trait consistent in each test. What surprised Planus the most was that every cockroach eventually ended up under the shelter.
They always reached this consensus, so we expected that some groups had more trouble than the others to reach this consensus, but at the end, no, they always finished segregated, so it's something really inside the individuals or the cockroaches. So that was really, that was amazing.
The differing personalities could explain the dark-loving insect's reputation as one of nature's great survivors, with bolder cockroaches venturing into new environments, while more cautious ones remain behind to check the surroundings are safe. The researchers now plan to analyze how individual cockroach behavior and learning affects the group mentality.
And, you know, what's interesting there is that they're looking at, like, group mentalities now and reactions. I mean, it's all about understanding how brains work to be able to control and get a handle on how brains work within organisms. There was another story that came out February of last year. I remember reading this when it first came out in Activist Post. Medical nanorobots will connect the brain to cloud computing, Ray Kurzweil. This was something that I didn't have time to get to yesterday. This is by Nicholas West, Activist Post, the human body version 2.0. Hold on 1 second. I got my echo here. There we go. The human body version 2.0 project features none other than arch transhumanist Ray Kurzweil as its main proponent. The goals have been openly stated for some time. Quote, in the coming decades, a radical upgrading of our body's physical and mental systems already underway, he says. We'll use nanobots to augment and ultimately replace our organs. We already know how to prevent most degenerative disease through nutrition and supplementation. Yes, of course, but this is my own commentary on this. We found out from Dr. Huber that by ingesting glyphosate, glyphosate inhibits our ability to properly uptake or maintain nutritional values from minerals. It chelates minerals out of our bodies. So even though we might be eating properly, we are not getting the proper nutrition any longer from our food. We already know how to prevent most degenerative diseases through nutrition and supplementation. This will be a bridge to the emerging biotechnology revolution, which will in turn be a bridge to the nanotechnology revolution. By 2030, reverse engineering the human brain will have been completed and non-biological intelligence will merge with our biological brains. In fact, the reverse engineering of the human brain has already been announced to be well underway via new microchips and accompanying software. And while full nanobot rewiring of the brain is not expected before 2020, so damn, full Nanobot fold, nanobot rewiring of the brain, not expected before 2020. But you guys do realize, right, it's 2015. Phys.org has reported that our DNA has been successfully targeted by nanobots for drug therapy or destruction. And, of course, that's something that we have spent about 7 weeks going in and out of, talking about RNAi and all of these new quote-unquote vaccines, which really aren't vaccines. They're manipulating our genetic code. Taking this even one step further, Ray Kurzweil said in a new interview with the Wall Street Journal that our extension into non-biological realms will include nanobot computers that will enter our brain and connect us to cloud computing. Yes, because we are all addicted. We talked about this yesterday, the augmentation. Right now, Microsoft, with their new cloud computing applications that give you business intelligence and help you manage your daily schedule, will then be ported to a chip in your brain. It's going to be your personal digital assistant in your head. From science fiction horror directly to the human body, the nanobots are no longer speculation. Also, unlike science fiction, they won't arrive via immediate world takeover. They are already here. They will be introduced incrementally, as Kurzweil has previously stated. Quote, it will be an incremental process, one already well underway, he says. Again, verification that everything we've been looking at and talking about is absolutely correct. We knew it was underway. I am pretty certain that that's why this nanotech and food that's been going on, what did I discover? It was at least 15 to 20 years quietly, unlabeled, without our knowledge. There, those nanobots, or at least nanoparticles, are definitely in our bodies. And if they've already been experimenting with smart dust and high-frequency waves, you know, you better believe that this is well underway. I just would like to know how far the extent is and how do we remove this stuff. You know, I dug into that a little bit, and nanoparticles accumulate in your organs, in your liver and your pancreas. So I'm wondering if there's any type of liver cleanse that we might be able to do. One of the things that we need to find is somebody who is working in biotechnology right now or in nanotechnology that, even though they found it extremely fascinating, there's probably going to be all kinds of high-paying science jobs out there in the future. They need to be a double agent for us. They need to give us or feed us like a Deep Throat on X-Files. You need to feed us the secrets as to how to be nanobot-free in the future. We need help. How do we disable these things? All right, let's get back to the story. So it'll be an incremental process, says Kurzweil, one already well underway. Although version 2.0 is a grand project, ultimately resulting in the radical upgrading of all our physical and mental systems, we will implement it one benign step at a time with his evil look on his face, rubbing his hands together as he contemplates world domination and being one with the machine. Based on our current knowledge, we can already touch and feel the means for accomplishing each aspect of this vision. Researchers from Columbia University have developed a fleet of molecular nanorobots that can deliver drugs to specific cells and also identify certain genetic markers by using fluorescent labeling. And I believe we found out that fluorescent labeling was called luciferase, wasn't it? I think so. After such identification, a chain reaction can be initiated. Here's a quotation out of some of this research. Quote, on cells where three components are attached, a robot is functional, and a fourth component initiates a chain reaction among the DNA strands. Each component swaps a strand of DNA with one another until the end of the swap, when the last antibody obtains a strand of DNA that is fluorescently labeled. at the end of the chain reaction, which takes less than 15 minutes in a sample of human blood, only cells with the three surface proteins are labeled with the fluorescent marker. Naturally, this type of therapeutic approach could prove beneficial, as researchers highlight, especially for cancer treatment, which this story was from 2014, and it has now been announced that they are about ready to begin the first human trials in some of this nanorobotic cancer treatment. Especially for cancer treatment, which sweeps up healthy cells along with malignant ones, very often doing more harm than good. Well, gee, good thing that they're getting ready to test this on people now then. This is always how new technologies are sold to the public, however. Yeah, isn't that what I said? A cure for cancer. Step right up! This is always how new technologies are sold to the public, however, and it would be naive to consider the darker applications, to not consider the darker applications as well. Direct brain modification already has been packaged as, quote, neuroengineering. A Wired article from early 2009 highlighted that direct brain manipulation via fiber optics is a bit messy, but once installed, it, quote, could make someone happy with the press of a button. Nanobots take the process to an automated level, rewiring the brain molecule by molecule. And worse, these mini drones can autonomously self-replicate, forcing one to wonder how this genie would ever be put back into the bottle once it was unleashed. Yes, the question we've all been asking. Here's one scenario offered by Kurzweil for how these nanobots could enter our body. Quote, a significant benefit of nanobot technology is that unlike mere drugs and nutritional supplements, which we found out that titanium dioxide, which is a nanoparticle, is in a lot of nutritional supplements. A significant benefit of nanobot technology is that unlike mere drugs and nutritional supplements, nanobots have a measure of intelligence. They can keep track of their own inventories and intelligently slip in and out of our bodies in clever ways. One scenario is that we would wear a special nutrient garment, such as a belt or undershirt. This garment would be loaded with nutrient-bearing nanobots, which would make their way in and out of our bodies through the skin and other body cavities. That might seem to offer a level of participatory choice to wear or not to wear the garment, but Kurzweil reveals that the nanobots will eventually be everywhere. Quote, ultimately, we won't need to bother with special garments or explicit nutritional resources, just as computation will eventually be ubiquitous. And yes, that is the internet of everything, people, and available everywhere. So too will basic metabolic nanobot resources be embedded everywhere in our environment. In a recent interview with the Wall Street Journal, Kurzweil highlights why Google has taken an interest in nanotechnology, which we looked at that story yesterday. Google's been working on all kinds of stuff with nanotechnology, putting it into your bloodstream, making sure that it can monitor all of your bodily systems. Kurzweil highlights why Google has taken an interest in nanotechnologies and the possibilities he sees for humans as they increasingly become non-biological and form direct connections with computers, augmenting and or supplanting our natural process as we head into the era of cyborgs and beyond. Let's listen to this interview quickly. And it's spinning. And I think this might be a commercial, so we could talk over it. It looks like it might be for Amazon. No, it was for Symantec. All right, here we go.
We're integrating with this technology. You know, when I was at MIT, the computer was across campus. Took up the floor of a building. Now we carry it in our pockets, on our belts. They're moving onto our eyes and our ears. Some people have them in their brains, like Parkinson's patients. The Parkinson's patient can actually download new software to the computer connected into their brain from outside the patient. It's pea size, so it requires minimally invasive surgery. But another exponential trend is the shrinking of technology. I've measured it at about a rate of 100 in 3D volume per decade. So these will be sized by the 2030s. So we'll have millions, billions of blood cell sized computers in our bloodstream in the 2030s, keeping us healthy, augmenting our immune system, and also going into the brain, putting our neocortex on the cloud, basically expanding our neocortex into the cloud. So today, if you need to do a complex search and you need 10,000 computers for 2 seconds, you can access that in a cloud. In 2035, I see somebody approaching me. I want to impress some. I need to think of something clever. I've got 2 seconds. My 300 million pattern recognizers in my neocortex isn't going to cut it. And I need a billion or 10 billion for 2 seconds. Just the way today I can access 10,000 computers in the cloud, I'll be able to access additional neocortex and think of something clever. And we will expand our neocortex. And if you remember what happened the last time we expanded our neocortex when we developed these big foreheads.
I don't remember. remind us, if you would.
Well, 2 million years ago, humanoids came on the scene. We had these big foreheads, so we had this frontal cortex, which is where we do our high-level thinking, language, art, science, journalism.
That was a very primitive stage of development, I think.
And, well, actually, storytelling was our first invention. And one of the points I make in my book is that the frontal cortex is actually no different than other parts of our neocortex. And it's an additional quantity of neocortex. But that additional quantity was the enabling factor for us to invent language and art and science. And we're going to expand the quantity again by basically expanding our neocortex into the cloud. And that will be another quantitative expansion, which will lead to another qualitative leap. And if you go out to 2045, so finally I'm getting to the singularity. So as I say, it's not one soundbite. We will have expanded our unenhanced intelligence a billionfold. And that's such a profound expansion that we borrowed.
I want to stop for a second. Did you hear by 2045, we will have expanded our intelligence a billionfold by connecting our cortex, our neocortex, to the cloud? I mean, this is frightening. I don't know if I'm still going to be here in 2045, but our kids probably will be. We should all be worried about this. What kind of horror are we going to leave our children to integrate with?
This metaphor from physics and call it a singularity.
What does it mean? What does the singularity produce? It produces machines that are self, not only smarter than human than the human brain, but are actually able to accelerate the degree of accelerant progress.
We are smart. I mean, we're smarter today. I mean, I see it myself. I mean, I wrote my last book in 4 months. My first book took 5 years because we didn't have these brain extenders. I can have a group now of 2-3 people in a couple of weeks do what used to require hundreds of people years. We're smarter, more productive, more effective because of the brain expanders we have. My view is that this is not creating these machines out there and it's going to be us versus them, but we are expanding our own capability. That's why we created these tools. I couldn't reach that fruit at that higher branch 2,000 years ago, so we created a tool that extended our physical reach. And we can now create skyscrapers. We can command all of human knowledge with a few keystrokes. So we expand our reach, and we're going to continue to do that. We're going to integrate with these technologies.
He's going to integrate with these technologies. But the sad fact of the matter is, what I see is happening is that this is happening without our consent. And we should all be standing up with pitchforks and burning torches because we are not consenting to this. Some people might be, and hey, go for it, man. That's what I say. You want to, you know, let the nanobots in, be my guest, but don't sneak them into my food or try and give me a pill that you think's going to be good for me because you say so. I'm going to read the rest of this story here. It says, and of course, our neocortex is going to be uploaded to the cloud. This positions Google perfectly for searching our every thought and pre-thought. And right now, they're pushing all of computing to the cloud. If you notice, we have all these new, the Google whatever the new Google computer is called, the Chromebook, I believe, that's all cloud. You don't really have any storage on your machine. You save everything online, and they sell it as it becomes ubiquitous. You can open it on any device, no matter where you are in the world. Your data is backed up and saved. Yeah, but the NSA and Google and everyone else who's paid their fee for the month for software as a service also has access to your data to comb and bag and tag. So when it becomes our thoughts and memories and not just our documents, just imagine how much juicier that's going to be for them. While this might sound like an impossible amount of information to upload, let alone interconnect and search, it is being announced that researchers have designed the first nanocomputer that can push beyond the concept of Moore's Law, which imposes a theoretical limitation on the expansion of computer processing power. And yes, they're working on all of that with quantum, which of course happens in the nano realm, with flashes of light and qubits and whatever. There's all kinds of new tech that is coming out of nanotechnology. Quote, this team designed and assembled from the bottom up a functioning ultra-tiny controlled computer that is the densest nanoelectric system ever built. A technical paper has been published online in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences on this research. The ultra-small, ultra-low-powered control processor, termed a nanoelectric finite state machine, or nano FSM, is smaller than a human nerve cell. And in their recent collaboration, they combined several tiles on a single chip to produce a first of its kind programmable nanocomputer. It should not be seen as a coincidence that these developments are all happening simultaneously. No, and I think that we on this show have established that pretty damn well. This is this very nefarious plan of the takeover of biological life as we know it. What appears on the surface to be discoveries in entirely different fields are coalescing rapidly as we approach the theoretical state of the singularity, a full merger of human and machine estimated to occur between 2029 and 2045. Despite the language of futurists, we know that a concerted effort is already underway to manage and predict human behavior for a whole range of potentially anti-human applications. And remember, like, let's go back 3 years ago, they were already profiling people using surveillance to determine whether or not you could be put on the terrorist watch list, right? If you were nervously looking at your watch in an airport, or if you were sweating, if you looked nervous in any way, if you darted your eyes around, you were on the terror watch list. But they were garnering a lot of that information just from security footage, you know, as well as TSA agents and see something, say something, call-ins for a Walmart gift card. But they were gathering intelligence on you and putting your 230-point facial recognition into a database. I actually saw a video the other day where they were showing some of the security systems now, these new ones going into place in airports. Did you see that? I think New Jersey is one of them, where they're using the Wi-Fi light bulbs that have cameras and microphones in them. And they were doing facial recognition right out of the camera that was in the light bulb and then back-ending to a facial recognition piece of software. And then as you're walking into the airport, or you're like, let's say Denver International Airport was the one place that I remember seeing those the moving sidewalks, right, that go down the center of the airport so you can walk, you know, one way or the other way on either side or get in the middle. And then they got the two walking sidewalks that go forward and the other direction. Well, as you're going on the walking sidewalk, they were showing this footage of like real-time facial recognition as you're going underneath the cameras, and it's capturing your face and then bloop and running you through the database. And I mean, that's not just happening at airports. That's happening all over. You know, makes you wonder if the Microsoft Cyber Center, which we looked at right at the very end of the show, is watching for criminal activity everywhere. And the NYPD, who has a Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center that Microsoft came in and helped them build to track terrorists. If places like that aren't already doing that, so no matter where you go, you know, your traffic, your stoplight surveillance cameras that are there taking pictures, or the Argus drones that are flying over 24/7 doing, you know, 1.6 billion megapixels, where they can then store all that data and then reverse the film backwards and zoom right in on your license plate when a crime has been committed. They can go back in time and watch where you went to and call out SWAT team to find you because they saw where you parked or ran down the block with your bank robber rings. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some major crazy shit going on right now. So now let's take that to the nth degree, beyond just high def surveillance cameras, to full out true surveillance. I mean, we know that they could take our metadata on our cell phones, even though they said metadata was innocuous. We found out when that one company decided to take someone's metadata and map it, just exactly how much information they can garner from your daily activities just by taking that quote unquote undistinguishable data from you. So multiply that to the nth degree, and they'll know when you're going to take a shit eventually. I mean, this is just so beyond uncool that I don't even know what to say about it anymore. I mean, it was uncool before, knowing that they could be flying over your house, and they have a way to see through your ceiling into your house. Yes, they do. They have a way to be outside your house, driving by in a car to see through the walls. Yes, they do. Back in the 1970s, they already, alphabet agencies already had a laser that they could shine through the glass of your window, unbeknownst to you, and be listening to conversations in the next room. I had a freaky thing happen to me when I was a kid, and I've told that story a long time ago. I'm not going to tell it right now, but I dug into it deeply a few years ago to see if I could ever find any proof for the timeline when it happened to me, to technology that existed at the time, because it seemed like it, I mean, at the time to us, the technology was something that didn't exist at the time, but it absolutely did. I found references back from the 60s and the 70s of them using a laser voice gun to capture conversations. So, you know, think about from back then what they had. And, you know, we've all said they're hundreds of years, if not, I mean, 50, 100 years beyond what we have. They're probably even more than that now, because don't forget, we have this exponential growth that happens as computers get faster. We use the computers to help develop faster and better technology. And as that, it becomes like a pyramid. Except a reverse pyramid. It started really small with a simple, and it's expanding into this huge mass that is growing at just leaps and bounds. Despite the benign language of futurists, we know that a concerted effort is already underway to manage and predict human behavior for a whole range of potentially anti-human applications. As our free will is also targeted, like the cells of our body, for drug therapy or elimination, ethical concerns must be voiced loud and clear. Scientists seem content with opening Pandora's box, and they most certainly do, when worrying about negative consequences later. And that is only if we assume that their intentions are benign from the beginning. And that's what I said. You know, I am totally not anti-technology. I am a technologist. That's what I've done for many years of my life. But I don't think the controllers of the technology are benevolent. They do not have the moral fortitude to put themselves into the throne of being gods, and that really is what they're doing. They are overthrowing the natural order of the world, the biology, and they are usurping the biological world that we were born into as a gift, mind you. This was, you know, look at how amazingly perfect the ecosystems on the planet were before we really started fucking them up. And we have. I mean, regardless of how it was done or who did it or which poison dumped where caused it to tip over the edge, we're about there, people. We have extinctions happening at huge numbers on a daily basis. We see now that the climate has reached a point, whether engineered or natural, there's some bad shit on the horizon. There's food shortages, water shortages, and, you know, this is going to turn us into the Hunger Games. Now, like I said, whether it was orchestrated or it's happened naturally, I don't know. But add to all of this then some of the even crazier mad science gone mad. The Large Hadron Collider just fired up this month, and it will be at full speed to start new, higher than ever seen before by man anywhere on this planet or in this solar system, explosions that are going to amplify anything that they were able to produce before by almost doubling their explosion rate in tetra TeVs, whatever those are, televolts, I think they're called, to what? Discover more God particles? Oh, what? They're looking for dark matter now. Oh, what? They think now, I saw a story the other day, that they think God particles might disintegrate into dark matter. Oh, what? There's now a theory that maybe dark matter is what made the dinosaurs go extinct. Yeah, actually, there is. There's this whole long story about some research they've been doing about the 26,000 years when we move into the galactic plane. And this wasn't some freak article either. This was actually a science. It was either on science.com or Scientific American. I mean, we do move through this galactic plane every 26,000 years of our solar system. They believe, you know, there's a massive, massive black hole and there's all this dark matter in 90% of the universe, but there's this large concentration that we pass through. And they are almost thinking that it's very possible that as we pass through dark matter, that the core of the planet begins to heat up. And when the core of the planet, and it's an interaction, an electrical interaction between the core of the planet and this dark matter, and as the core of the planet heats up, so does the planet. Look at what's happening. So as we're firing up this Large Hadron Collider, now with the purpose of finding dark matter, and they're going, oh, our climate is off the rails now. We don't know what's going on. It's all your fault. Damn you, humans. But check this out. I mean, this is the Large Hadron Collider. I connected this dot because this is beyond mad science gone mad. Not only are they attacking us at an atomic level, but then they are also attacking us from the absolute opposite extreme, the macro level. It's pretty much dealing with the same elementals just at the scale of the universe as opposed to the scale of an atom. And they are creating explosions where the only time energies of that scale have been seen were at the time of the Big Bang. So here, I just want to read a title to you because it's getting to the end of the show and I didn't want to really spend, we'll do a whole show on the Large Hadron Collider, but let me just read this title. So we know that they supposedly found the God particle. It was a version of the God particle I was just reading recently. It wasn't like the God particle that they were looking for. But that the God particle now, they believe, disintegrates into dark matter. Now they're on a hunt for dark matter. And then this story comes out March 18th, which was 2 days ago. Detection of mini black holes at the Large Hadron Collider, because they were saying that mini black holes may appear, could indicate parallel universes in extra dimensions. So, you know, back when they first started these whacked out experiments that shouldn't be done on a planet, it should be done in deep space by people who aren't anywhere near us. Some physicists had come out and warned that though there's not a huge chance, there is still a chance, since we're messing with things that we don't understand, that we might accidentally put a tear in space-time. I don't know about you. But I know no one asked me whether or not I consented to this experiment on my blue dot. Right? This is my blue dot. It's your blue dot. It's everybody's blue dot. We were born here. So shouldn't we have a say? If you're going to run an experiment that has a chance, even if it's a slim one, of opening up a rip in space-time and sucking us whole to disappear for eternity, don't you think that we should have had a global vote on that? Because I do. So anyway, I read another story, and maybe it was this one. They actually say in here that it's part of their plan. They're looking for extra dimensions and parallel universes. So if anyone ever doubted that these people that are running the show. If anyone ever doubted that these people were evil or that there wasn't some sort of plan to take us out, I mean, would we even go as far as saying maybe we really have been infiltrated by an outside intelligence somewhere? I mean, where's the humanity in this? Where's the humanity in thinking that it's okay to replace nature, which has perfectly worked beautifully without us for millions of years? There is a complete, utter, absolute, beautiful balance that occurs without the human cancer to pollute and destroy and take for their own benefit. You know, when we go mine oil, let's say, sure, they paid to mine it, but is that oil really theirs just because they paid to find it? I would say we should all be getting a cut of those multi-billion dollar profits, don't you? Why is that their oil? That's as much my oil pocket as it is yours. I live in the United States. I live on the globe. This was all naturally deposited by the planet. Well, as being a creature of the planet, shouldn't we benefit from that? Like, I just don't understand where they thought private ownership, and I'm not talking socialism, but I'm talking about like natural resources. Why are these things being coveted by the most rich, owned, and then allowed to enslave us? And why are they using technologies like this that are definitely beyond our understanding, beyond our control, just like nanobots? We don't know what's going to happen if these things get loose. And Robert Freitas had also been asked the question by Crazy Kurzweil about what happens with self-replication. And even Freitas, who has written ad nauseum about how wonderful this is going to be for the future, recommends against self-replicating. Genie out of the bottle in so many ways, all over the board. And I don't see how we're going to stuff it back in. My plunger is broken and it's a little too small. All right, guys, we got about 20 seconds left. Happy Friday. Happy solstice. Happy once in a 300-year event eclipse over England that happened at like 4:30 this morning Eastern time. And happy blood moon or whatever that moon is that's coming. All right, guys, make sure you stick around tonight. Josh will be live at 6 p.m. Eastern. We have primer time is now running in the 8 p.m. slot. So it'll be primer time random replay, but those are always awesome. 9 o'clock is Brandon's show from this week, 10, United Front Radio. And at 11, Intermedia Radio, live with Levon. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Friday. Come back this weekend, always awesome radio. And we will catch up with you on Monday.